What can you do when your friends get sick of you prying into their problems?
Do what everyone else is doing, of course. Start a podcast.
Introducing If I Speak, a brand new podcast from me, Ash Sarkar.
And me, Moya Lothi McLean, where we pitch each other our big theories about the universe, share the intrusive thoughts keeping us up at night, and best of all, tackle your personal dilemmas.
We'll be asking questions like, does tabloid gossip turn us all into conspiracy theorists?
Should you financially support a parent?
Is Moya turning into a bit of a femcel?
Yes. What's Ash's most toxic trait?
Interrupting. From dating disorders to family feuds, career dilemmas to online etiquette,
the political gets personal on If I Speak.
Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's gossip elevated.
Hello and welcome to Intelligence Squared. I'm senior producer Connor Boyle. Today we're learning about the history of one of the most universal human gestures of communication found throughout the world, the handshake. Paleoanthropologist Ella El-Shamahi joins science broadcaster and author Helen Chersky to discuss her book, The Handshake, A Gripping History. The discussion originally aired in April 2021. If you'd like to hear the episode ad-free and support our mission to foster honest debate and compelling conversations, head to intelligencesquared.com/membership or subscribe to our channel on Apple. Now let's join Helen Chersky with more.
Hello, I'm delighted to welcome our guest today, Ella El-Shamahi. She is a National Geographic explorer, TV presenter, stand-up comedian, and very importantly for our discussion today, she is the author of this new book called The Handshake, A Gripping History, which is a very good pun. Well done to whoever thought that up. Now, obviously, if it was 2019, we would be in person, we would have started with a handshake, but there are none of those today, which seems like a particular shame for this interview. So Ella, tell us a little bit, first of all, about how you got into this topic.
So some people actually think I'm clairvoyant and that I just started writing a book about the handshake, you know, a while ago. And then just very conveniently, a global pandemic happened. The pandemic was happening, it was getting underway, and there was a lot going on, a lot of people saying a lot of things about the handshake that I just wasn't buying, or I just knew to be factually incorrect. And it almost felt like maybe five journalists have been pressing their editors for the last God knows how many years to let them write a book kind of decrying and basically poo-pooing the handshake. And their editors had always been saying to them, no, you can't do it, it's not relevant, blah, blah, blah. And suddenly they had their moment, because suddenly there was just this dearth of like articles basically saying it was, everybody hated the handshake apparently. And I just thought, I'm refusing to write the obituary of the handshake. Instead, I should write an ode to the handshake. And it was actually partly instigated by by one of my agents. I obviously spend a lot of time kind of in the outdoors and traveling, and suddenly I was benched, you know, rightfully so, kind of sitting there twiddling my thumbs, and one of my agents was like, you know what, you're an archaeologist, I think it'd be a really good idea to write a book on the handshake. And I just started laughing, because I thought, you have no idea how relevant this topic is to me, because also for the first 26 years of my life I never really shook a man's hand, because I followed really strict Muslim law on the issue. And I've kind of obsessed about this issue for a really long time. So it was all these things kind of worked out. And then it was like, right, well, we're going to have to write it really quickly, which is obviously always a challenge at the best of times. But yeah, it feels great to write something about something that people have kind of not really thought about that extensively, and for it to feel like its moment.
So tell us a little bit about your perspective on it, because obviously, you know, you come to this with academic expertise that isn't in handshake specifically, but it is relevant. So tell us where you're coming from.
Well, I'm a paleoanthropologist, and I'm, you know, interested in evolutionary biology and anthropology kind of generally. There was a number of things that were going on. One was this idea that the handshake was from medieval times. It was to show that you weren't carrying a weapon. And then, you know, missionaries spread it. And I wasn't buying the missionaries thing at all. And I also wasn't buying the whole medieval thing, because I just thought, well, I work in a lot of hostile territories, and actually all you're talking about there is providing access, right? Like, I'm not having that at all. And actually, one of the interesting things is that the handshake has been used to assassinate a US president. President McKinley was killed by somebody coming in pretending to perform a handshake. And I was familiar with Dr. Kat Hobater's work. So Dr. Kat Hobater is a primatologist. Now, we've known for a long time that chimps shake hands, but we haven't been very clear on the meaning of that. And that's where, you know, somebody like Kat comes in. And she was able to kind of decipher the meaning of the handshake. And one of the wonderful things is that she talks about how the handshake, it doesn't have a really, really precise meaning. It's just kind of very broad positive meanings that can morph and change a little bit. And that's, again, really fascinating because that's kind of what it means for us. In fact, if you look at ancient Greece, a lot of classicists talk about the handshake and kind of the handshake motif being used everywhere. And they actually say, yeah, it is kind of ambiguous in terms of its meaning, but it's always positive. And then I'm thinking, okay, well, the chimps are shaking hands. We're shaking hands. The bonobos are shaking hands. In terms of evolutionary biology, there's an obvious suggestion for why we would all be shaking hands, and that's an evolutionary one. And then you think, well, our common ancestor lived about 7 million years ago. It's not, you know, in fact, it's kind of most obvious thing is to suggest that the handshake is at least 7 million years old. And then you think, well, is there a functional reason for the handshake? And then we know that touch is really important for nodes of things, really well documented. But what a lot of people don't realize is that chemical signals, are really important amongst humans. Again, there's quite a bit of research that's been done on chemo signals with regards to the handshake. And I could just written this book on chemo signals because it's just delicious. But chemo signals, there are all these experiments and some of them involve putting gauze under people's armpits and getting them to watch a scary film or a happy film, and then taking that gauze to a different group of participants. And they accurately reflect the kind of the right micro expressions for that expression on their faces. And there's kind of loads of variations on these studies. But essentially, the bottom line is that chemical signals are important for humans, which, of course, I don't know about you, Helen, but that is not something that I would have ever imagined, you know, when I was growing up, that I communicate with people chemically. I would have just thought it was by words and actions.
Let's dig into some of those things. Let's pick apart some of those things, because the whole load of stuff, and you did write a whole book about all of these things. But let's go back to basics a little bit. How do we define a handshake? Because I can imagine that is quite different for different cultures, for different groups. How do bonobos shake hands? How do we shake hands? What counts as a handshake?
So chimps often shake hands with their fingers, sometimes with their feet, which I think is adorable. Something we haven't quite got to yet. And in terms of humans, historically, some people have argued that the hand clasp is not the same thing as the handshake. I don't buy that at all. I think it's probably the same thing. But it's interesting that handshaking appears in, for example, the literature of the British Isles and the writings and sources of the British Isles much later than hand clasping. And actually, it's seen as a bit of a Scottish thing, the handshaking. But I would say handshaking and hand clasping are probably the same thing. And then there are all these variations on that globally. So I've argued that the handshake that we see in England or in America is the handshake light. And a lot of other cultures will add things onto them. So, you know, a lot of people will add a hug onto it or a kiss onto it. We're kind of familiar with that. Other cultures add the nose rub onto it. So a number of Gulf Arab states, for example, add a nose rub. There are other cultures where they sometimes actually there's like a dance that accompanies it. Or my favorite is the Liberian finger snap, where you go in for a handshake and at the end you literally snap your fingers. And the louder the snap, you know, the thinking is the louder the snap, the more you're fond of the person. Although
that's socially very sensitive, that, especially if perhaps you don't get it right. What if you've got greasy palms or something and it all goes wrong?
I mean, this is the thing. It took me a really long time to understand how to even do the Liberian finger snap. And one of the interesting things about the Liberian finger snap is you started seeing it disappearing during the Ebola outbreak. And then it starts coming back again. So there's all these patterns that you kind of would expect to see that do pretty much play out. But yeah, there are all these variations on the handshake. And there are some, I guess, that are more extinct, that have become extinct rather in the last 100 years. So my favourite is the penis handshake, which is kind of absolutely magnificent and wonderful, really. It's kind of, the variations on it have been practised in a number of different parts of the world. But
I imagine they're all warm places.
Yeah.
It's not something that works when you're covered with many layers of clothing, is it? I assume.
Yeah, that is actually weirdly, Helen, you're right there. It's interesting because, you know, again, if you see us as animals, is it weird to think that touching the genitalia is a form of greeting? It isn't. It's just because we see ourselves as being special, as being different from animals, that for us that's quite shocking. But actually, you know, it's kind of part and parcel of us being.
Dogs are all over that, aren't they? So we're talking about something which is, so it's a palm to palm. The fingers are holding on a little bit to some extent, depending on where you are. And maybe there's a shake. So what, as a greet, is this normally a greeting? How do handshakes, because I guess I mean, one thing that's interesting, I think, about your book coming out now is that it's actually a good time to examine the handshake, because it's so long since all of us have done it. We've all got that little bit of distance. What was it we used to, I can't actually remember. What did we do? There's this kind of a natural re-examination, because we've stopped doing it instinctively. Now, if someone reached your hand out, you'd run away almost. Why are these things so important? Let's perhaps start with that. You know, if all these different people and animals do them, what is it about a handshake that is so distinctive compared with all the other ways you could greet someone?
I don't know. And I don't know if in the book I'm arguing that it's superior to the other forms of touch. I think touch is fundamentally really important in greetings. And I argue that a handshake is a unit touch. And touch is important because of the reasons I mentioned. You know, touch is really important in terms of what it does for our hormones. It's really important in terms of chemo signals. And I think probably the gold standard is actually the hug, because if you think about it, you really are taking a sniff of the other person. That's like about as close as you can get. But I think the handshake is brilliant because it's kind of somewhere in a comfortable medium. It's not quite as intimate as some of the others. But, you know, you can ask, well, why isn't it the Liberian finger snap that's in the halls of Whitehall? Why isn't it the nose rub of, you know, the Gulf Arabs, or the forehead and nose touch of say the Maori? And I think that's partly about cultural power. So I think that's partly globalization, colonialism, and cultural power. And I think it's just a toss-up as to which one of them came out on top. And because of those things, I think that's why it came out on top.
Is there an aspect of that which is kind of sort of lowest common denominator thing? It's almost like a pigeon, you know, that you've got these people who have made various, you know, they've got a complicated grammar of, you know, body, you know, how to communicate through touch. And it's this very simple unit. Like, there might be all these bells and whistles on top in your own culture, but there's a sort of very basic thing at the bottom. And that's the bit everybody understands.
I mean, possibly. But then, you know, there are other kinds of touch in greetings which have fallen by the wayside now that aren't egalitarian. The wonderful thing about the handshake, in a similar way to the hug, actually, they are quite egalitarian. So during medieval times in the UK, for example, there was the greeting where you would put your palms together in between the hands of your master, you know, or whoever was more high up. There was the curtsy, there were the kind of kisses on the hand. But all of them are really hierarchical or gendered. And I don't think it's any coincidence whatsoever that we saw the handshake rising as democracy and gender equality were rising. So I think it's quite possible that what you're saying is correct, that it's the most basic form of it. But then there are so many other forms of basic touch that it is interesting that this one came out on top. And I think that's probably for multiple reasons. But it is really interesting to speculate, because we could have lived in a world where everybody was nose rubbing, you know?
Intelligence Squared is a tight-knit team doing big things, and it means we're always looking for tools that can help streamline managing tasks. That's why I want to talk to you for a minute about NetSuite. NetSuite provides cloud-based software to get things moving. Maybe your business has been humming, but you can feel things are falling behind a little bit. Or perhaps your team is getting snowed with manual tasks and closing those books is taking forever. If this sounds like you, you should know these three numbers. 37,000, 25, 1. 37,000, that's the number of businesses which have upgraded to NetSuite by Oracle. 25, NetSuite turns 25 this year. That's 25 years of helping businesses do more with less, allowing them to close their books in days, not weeks, and drive down costs. And 1, because your business is one of a kind, so you get a customized solution for all of your KPIs in one efficient system with one source of truth. It means you can manage risk, get reliable forecasts, and improve margins. It's everything you need to grow all in one place. NetSuite is now making an unprecedented offer to make more of that kind of thing possible. Right now, you can download NetSuite's popular KPI checklist designed to give you consistently excellent performance absolutely free at netsuite.com/squared. That's netsuite.com/squared to get your own KPI checklist. netsuite.com/squared. We make a lot of stuff here at Intelligence Squared. So many great chats to enrich the mind like the one you're listening to now. But like any business, it's really essential to be in good shape and keep things efficient so you can see the big picture all in one place. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems, and it's super easy to get started because NetSuite exists in the cloud, so no hardware needed, cutting your IT costs too. And you'll also improve efficiency by bringing all your major processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. That's why over 37,000 companies have already made the move. The cost of living crisis might not be making anything any cheaper, but there's real value in feeling on top of things, which is something I experience firsthand as an event producer every day. And now, by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/squared. That's netsuite.com/squared. netsuite.com/squared. Sponsoring the show for this episode is Marquee TV. Marquee TV is a streaming service with a difference. It's bringing you the top tier of performing arts straight into your living room or onto your device. So think dance, theatre, music, anything you might find in the West End, Broadway, or maybe a cool little experimental space too, but saving you the cost of a few tickets as well. I've got happily a bit lost in their vast library of performances, exclusive interviews, and behind-the-scenes content. Choreographer Jonathan Watkins' interpretation of George Orwell's classic 1984 was pretty cool, and I love the dance piece Sutra, inspired by the skills of Buddhist Shaolin monks. And we've got a special treat for our listeners. Marquee TV offers 3 months of access for just 99 cents. That's right, 3 months for only 99 cents with the code squared. Simply visit marquee.tv and use the promo code squared to dive into the world of arts like never before. Bring the arts home with Marquee TV.
I think that, you know, it's interesting. I don't think, obviously, none of us really think we're that old, but I remember as a postdoc, you know, or even a student, you know, perhaps 15 or 20 years ago in an all male environment, in a physics environment, and the men wouldn't know what, they would all shake hands with each other and then they'd sort of look at me and then one of them might shake my hand. And I saw their behavior. I assumed I was going to behave in the same way, but it was really odd for them. And I'd never thought about it as being a hierarchy thing that didn't shake hands with a woman. But the implication is that's because there's a status difference.
Yeah. And some people like to argue that there isn't, and some people will argue, no, you know, even the kiss on the hand is about respect, and I'm not buying it at all.
It's a very strange. I think yes, there's a lot. I think respect is not quite the right word. It's othering.
I personally see the kiss on the hand as you're delicate, you're more special, and we're going to wrap you with, you know, with bubble wrap. And what have you. So that's why I don't buy it. And so, you know, I think and one of the really interesting things actually about the handshake in the US is that there's this really reasonably strong argument that the Quakers had something to do with the prominence of the handshake in the US, because again, it was kind of, you know, trying to be gone with the British monarchy and this idea that we're all equal and what have you. But again, you see that movement in the US of the handshake. And actually, one of the interesting things is that Washington actually quite liked the you know, the kind of the bowing and the what have you. He liked that. And people criticized him for it. They thought it was these are flares that a president of a republic shouldn't have.
That's what you do with a king, not a president.
Exactly. And, you know, and then, of course, very, very quickly, the presidents afterwards dropped it. And very quickly, and they favored the handshake. So, you know, this thing that we've completely taken for granted, we haven't really appreciated just how at its very core has been seen as quite a revolutionary act.
Well, how do we, I mean, this is something else in here, which is that as a, because I you know, it seems that this touch is important. Like, you can greet someone from a distance and you can wave at them, But the handshake is, it's about as far away as you can get from someone and still touch them in some ways. So why is touch important for greeting?
So I would say touch is important for greeting. Chemo signals, as I said, it's the best way of transferring chemo signals, put it like that. And if you think about it, the nose rub is really on the nose with what chemo signal. You're literally just sniffing the other person's But touch in of itself is also important. So I remember years back kind of first being exposed to this idea that touch with children was really important, because of the Romanian orphanages and orphans and how they weren't touched and the psychological trauma that happened there. And then obviously now we're at the point with modern medicine where there's this real understanding that babies need to be touched, preemies need to have human contact. It really helps. But actually this carries on in where, to us, there's a term that's been coined, which is skin hunger, which is the idea that people don't always get touched as much. Now you might say, okay, well, that's a different level of touch. That's not quite in a greeting, but actually just in a greeting, that level of just even that bit of touch, it reduces the heart rate. We know that there are hormones that are released, oxytocin, a few other things, which again, really interesting in terms of what they do to our bodies, kind of calming us down. They're very good for social bonding. And beyond that, even there are experiments to show that touch, whether it's psychological or whether it's the touch itself and what it does to our hormones, it's kind of more difficult to decipher, is useful. So it's worth putting as a footnote that it's very difficult to do some of these experiments because they involve touching people. So you've got to imagine there's an extra layer of kind of, paperwork that you need to go through. But there's an experiment where a waiter just tapped people's shoulders. And when he did, there was a jump in the tip that he received. So it went from 11.5 to 15%, for example. There are experiments that Professor Paul Zak does. I mean, he is the touch guy. I think he spent $6,000 on massages and was able to show...
Great research budget. I would love to put that on a research budget.
And he does comment on it, and he points out that he never got any of those massages. But that's interesting because he was able to show that participants that received a massage were more willing to trust absolute strangers with money. It is wonderful. And again, I'm sure, discerning kind of listeners will say, yeah, but there's a different level, that's massage and it's not kind of just a brief touch. But I think the argument is that there's probably a gradient going on. And remember, there are cultures in this world that are doing absolutely fine without touch for greetings among strangers. So I think it's fair to see it as part of an important repertoire and that as a species we've evolved to not need it in the same way that, we would have done if we were still animals, kind of, in the forests or in the plains, non-human animals, shall I say. But I think it still serves a functional purpose.
So let's then come to the current day and the lack of handshakes for a full year now. What have we lost then? I mean, obviously, most of us haven't really met any people. But assuming we've might have met a few new people and we would normally have shaken their hands, what do we lose? Like, how much does it matter whether or not we get this back, basically?
Well, I think a lot of people are missing touch. I mean, there are some people who are really happy to be done with touch, but I do think they're a minority. I think most of us want touch back. We want to be able to hug people. We want to be able to touch people. We want proximity again. And I don't think it's so much what we lose, because I think, we'll probably be able to get by with, some of us with some psychological scarring. I'm quite happy to say that I'm not happy about this. I don't think it's done my mental health much good not being able to touch people. But I think, we would probably be okay-ish. But I think the thing is, it will come back. If history's taught us anything with regards to the handshake and pandemics and epidemics, it does come back. And I think that's probably the functionality overriding. I think a lot of what we're seeing with the handshake and its benefits is very subconscious. We're acutely unaware of most of it. There are experiments that people have done where they've replaced one of the handshakers with a robot. I think it was for property sales. And they showed that it's... Even with a robot, it increased the confidence of the buyers and sellers.
Just because you got to shake hands with, I think shaking hands with a robot would.
I thought it was weird.
Freak me out. Yeah.
I think it's weird, but clearly there's something psychologically comforting to us to see that handshake, to see that kind of, I'd argue it's almost like a bookending something, you know, it's like, that's the final, it's useful to have some kind of a gesture to do that. But I think for me, that one of the biggest take home, what I would love the take home for people really is to read the book and think, we are animals and we're just unaware of a lot of what's going on under the surface with us. And there's all this stuff that we rely on, it's useful to us, but it hasn't been articulated necessarily.
So should we think of the handshake as the equivalent of dogs going around sniffing each other's bottoms?
Yep. I didn't even need you to get to the end of that one, Helen. Yep. I think that's, I when I sit there kind of watching animals, whether, you know, I don't know, in the Serengeti or anywhere, there are certain things that you know are going on and you don't think anything of them. You're like, yeah, of course the animals are communicating chemically. And yet when it comes to us, we're like, no, that's abhorrent. And that's really fascinating, because if you think about, there's a fascinating term called emotional contagion. And it's used sometimes, it's controversial, but it's used sometimes to argue, you know, certain things about crowds and, you know, whether it's kind of riots or happiness or whatever, that's partly chemical, that there's kind of, everybody's giving off certain chemicals. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, this is not in any way scientific, but I have definitely been in places where there's been a mood change and I haven't quite been able to put my finger on what on earth's happened. Then you just kind of shrug your shoulder and you go, yeah, maybe it was chemical.
You started sweating in a particularly dramatic way. Well, let's get on to the symbolism of handshakes, because there's all the practical stuff in terms of what physically touching someone does. But we know, you know, we see it on the television news, again, not at the moment, but you spend a chapter in your book thinking, well, two chapters, on the best and worst handshakes in history. And these are not, one of the things that's interesting about this is you highlight them for being important, not for the individuals involved, but because everybody else sees a message in the handshake. So let's start with the first one, which is, if I had to think of a handshake, this would probably be about the only one I could think of, which is Princess Diana and the AIDS patient. So tell us a little bit about the symbolism of handshakes in that context.
So at this time, you have to remember how stigmatized AIDS patients were. In fact, I actually dug up some headlines from that time in the British press. And I mean, they're not repeatable. They're really just awful headlines. And it was so bad that actually what a lot of people don't realize is that when she turned up to this kind of newly built specialized unit, the patients all hid because there were cameras and none of them wanted to be seen on camera because they were so angry and upset with the press.
So just to be very, very clear, because it does feel like a long time ago and it's hard to remember how bad this was, but people saw there was a prejudice against AIDS patients, which sort of saw them as being almost inhuman in having this thing that they could pass on to other people and make them inhuman as well. I mean, it was absolutely horrible, right?
Yeah, it really was. And it was, you know, I mean, I'm not even going to entertain the headline and repeat them, but they were absolutely, I mean, really something. And there was this general feeling, not just that you could just, it was like, oh, you could just touch a HIV patient and you'd get AIDS, or sometimes it was even like just being in the same room as them, you know, you would get it.
It's almost like medieval superstition, isn't it?
It was really, really incredible. I mean, you know, as I said, all these patients were hiding, they didn't want to come out, and eventually one of them, bless him, came out and agreed to do this. More, I mean, he was dying, like he knew he wasn't going to make it, and so it's just really heartwarming, just heartbreaking at the same time. But I argue that it's actually one of the most revolutionary gestures that a very privileged person has probably ever kind of done in recent history.
Because so she shook his hand and that was the picture that was then in
the press. Shook his hand, yeah. And he's an unnamed HIV patient. We don't have his name. And it was shocking, you know, because everyone thought, oh my God, aren't you afraid that you're going to get AIDS and you're not wearing a glove? And, you know, Prince Harry actually not too long ago was quoted as saying she knew exactly what she was doing. This was very intentional on her side.
So she was very keen to do this because she knew that someone had to take this step and she was prepared for it to be her.
Yeah, she knew that she had to lead by example. She was trying to pass on the message that you cannot get HIV from shaking hands. And she's even quoted as saying, you know, something to the effect of hugging them and shaking their hand is fine. Heaven knows they need it, you know. And it's actually really interesting because, of course, Boris Johnson recently, like a year ago, was going around shaking hands, and some of his defenders were saying, ah, but, you know, he was doing it in the same way that Princess Diana should. And it was like, no, Princess Diana was following the science. Boris Johnson was not following the science. There's a really big difference. At the time, we knew that you could not get AIDS or HIV from a handshake. At the time, you know, a year ago, we knew that you could get COVID from a handshake. That's just, you know, it's a very different ball game. But for me, that is one of the most significant, important handshakes of all time.
And just carrying on with the symbolism, I mean, when if I actually count up the number of handshakes I do, it is probably the case back, you know, in the before times, it's probably the case that most of them were on the sports pitch, were on a badminton court, actually, in my case, and that there is this other very common use of a handshake, which is that you have a battle of some sort, it's not a battle to the death, but it's a battle of some sort. And then you shake hands afterwards, as a mark of respect. Tell us a little bit about that, because I can't imagine. In fact, I was thinking about this the other day. If I go back to my badminton club, which might reopen in a few weeks, because the thought of finishing a game or a match and not shaking their hand feels wrong. Why does it feel like that?
Is it psychologically? I also talk about three particular handshakes in business, in sport, and in politics. And the sport one is really interesting because you see haptic greetings at the. You've got to imagine. So you're basically going in quite violently sometimes. You're effective. It's like a mock war if you want to go there. You know, you're fighting each other. And for me, that handshake at the end is about sportspersonship, sportswomanship, sportsmanship. And it's also for me saying that was fake. That wasn't real. That wasn't a real fight. That was us just having a game, so to speak. And it's, you know, it's a clear line in the sand. Okay, now we move forward. And it is so important, you know, there are actually one or two sports handshakes that are quite famous because of stuff like this, because they either go against or they go with what's seen as good sportsmanship. And, you know, I do think about it a lot because I do think that handshake is so we all know that that was just a game. It was just fake. We weren't really in battle. And that's the end of it. Because if you know, without any context, you look at some sports and they're quite violent. You really are going at it. So it's good to have kind of a clean kind of, you know, and it's worth also pointing out that in other cultures where maybe the handshake isn't common, still there's always some kind of a gesture that ends a sport or begins a sport, because it's this understanding that we have to kind of bookmark it. We have to make it clear what this is. Of course, we're in the area of complete theory, and these are just the kind of the theories that I'm most kind of attached to. But it's very hard to prove a lot of this.
But it is. It's interesting because it is intuitive. If you took these things away, we would somehow be less human. But it makes them very hard. They're so integrated. You can see why they're hard to study. Well, let's shift on to the particularly important in these. If people are listening to this and considering their handshake future, the realities of the bugs and the microbes. Now, we have to sort of preface this, I think, by saying that we are all covered in lots of little organisms that aren't us, and that's perfectly fine. And they're all little single cells, and they're living their lives specialized to our belly buttons or our ankles or wherever it is, and they're perfectly fine. And so they're there all the time. Now, the handshake in the context of this, there is a reason that in a pandemic, shaking hands becomes less of a good idea. Tell us a little bit about the bugs and where they go.
So there's a lot of bugs and they do get passed on through handshakes. There has been a discussion for a long time in the medical world about handshakes and how maybe we should just drop the handshake full stop, because it's seen as, you know, spreading a lot of stuff. And people have looked at alternatives. Some people have suggested the fist bump. Some people have suggested a fist bump that's just a one knuckle fist bump, which there's a point where you're like, guys, just give up. That's where you're going to go. But others have argued, no, we shouldn't be talking about banning the handshake or not having the handshake in medical setups. Instead, we should talk about compliance, washing our hands properly. So look, as a baseline, I think it's like 150 I don't know, there's all kinds of statistics about how many bacteria you will find on your palm on any given day. But what's more alarming to me is statistics like there being around 20% of people globally do not wash their hands after a number two.
So that's the sort of thing that I mean, you know, I find very shocking. I'm wondering who these people are and hoping it isn't anybody I know. But
It's possible with something like that, but it is also worth remembering not everybody has access to water globally and soap and all the rest of it. But there was there have been a number of studies done. I mean, there's this one that's kind of really well publicized, the Evening Standard, I think. I mean, I don't know how robust the study itself was, but they basically sampled a whole pile of pub kind of knick-knack foods and what have you.
Yeah, better not to ask, right?
they found fecal matter. That's the thing, not just urine, fecal matter on quite a lot of it. And there's a point where you just think, that's what? what's your excuse?
You know? At some point, presumably there's a line because, I mean, you know, there are things that definitely move diseases around that, and fecal matter would be one of them that you don't want. But presumably there's also some benefits to humans being in touch with each other and having a population of their own little bugs, which is, you know, more or less in line with everybody else's around them. So presumably if you get rid of touch completely, you're not sharing the helpful bugs.
But Helen, I think even if we don't think about them as helpful bugs, even if they're actual just bugs, I don't know how you're feeling, but one of the things we're not really thinking about right now is, so when we were growing up, for example, it was at the height of, we're going to Dettol everything. We're going to make sure everything has, you know, antibacterial spray all over it. And then maybe about 10 years ago, there was the, actually, hold on a second. We're starting to see some associations here between, you know, asthma, allergies, blah, blah, blah. Maybe there's something going on. Maybe we need to actually not be so OCD about our kids being exposed to germs. Now, obviously, COVID is an exceptional and particularly serious one. But there's a trade-off and there's a balancing act between people being exposed to other people's bad bugs and health. You know, it's a really difficult, because you do want people's immune systems to be more robust. And it's going to be really interesting right now, because I don't know how your kind of circle is doing in your friend group and what have you, but there are elements of my friend group that are already a bit OCD. And, you know, for a while we've been telling them, look, you know, it's good to kind of get some stuff in your system, you know, make yourself a bit more robust. And obviously there's the feeling that they're vindicated right now. And you're thinking, okay, well, right now, yeah, we should all be doing this. But if we carry on like this for, you know, God knows how many years, and we're avoiding each other and we're, you know, Dettoling everything down to the extreme.
That comes with problems too.
Yeah, there are health costs to that. So it's a really difficult one.
The handshake really is a multifunctional thing. But just, you know, on the, there's no sort of, I mean, you talked about fist bumps and things, but I was thinking there's no equivalent of the air kiss for handshake, really. You sort of wave at someone from a distance. There's the way that the Japanese do it. You know, there are some, we don't have a natural simulation of a handshake, which is the, you know, because an air kiss thing, I was told quite late in life that it's so you don't disturb someone's makeup. That wouldn't have occurred to me. But anyway, where is there an equivalent of the air kiss for the handshake, in that before people have to decide, you know, what they're going to do about handshakes in the far distance, in the next 6 months to a year, what is there an equivalent that's anywhere near as good?
So culturally, in parts of the Middle East and the Muslim world, putting the hand on the heart can be seen as the equivalent of a handshake, and it's certainly done between genders. So I used to practice that in my fundamentalist days, and I definitely reverted back to it on Zoom calls because it was quite convenient. Hand on the heart. Emmanuel Macron actually used it when he went to Beirut after the massive explosion there. So, but that's not one that comes very naturally, I don't think, to a Western audience. I don't think we have, you know, if anything, I'd argue that the namaste is probably, we're more familiar with it. But again, some of these are...
This is where the hands are placed together. You, both of your palms touch each other and your hands are vertical and you sit, yeah.
I mean, one of the things we can look at is some of the surveys and studies that were done pre-COVID in the medical field when people were speaking to different patients about, you know, different greeting. Because as I said, you know, this argument has been going on for a while, really for a while, since at least the 1920s, where different medics and medical professionals have been trying to get people to stop shaking hands, especially in kind of hospitals. And there is a feeling by some people that, for example, the fist bump, fine, that, you know, it transfers less, but it's seen by some as being quite aggressive, you know. Other things are seen as being quite alien to the culture that people come from. So that's one of the issues with the namaste, for example. It's seen as not being of this culture. And so particularly with the older generation, it seems harder for them to adopt. So I don't think we do have an equivalent. I do think the elbow bump will probably enter the repertoire of greetings. And I think what we'll probably see is something similar to what happens in parts of the Far East, where in parts of the Far East pre-COVID, if you had a cold and you weren't wearing a face mask, you were just seen as being quite selfish, like quite bluntly. And people would sometimes comment, like if they saw you sneezing, like, why aren't you just wearing a face mask? Just stop being selfish. So I imagine the elbow bump, if you've got a bit, you know, if you've got sniffles, there'll be more of an understanding of, I should probably put my elbow forward instead of my hand forward.
Although that also involves your face getting relatively close. I mean, there's trade-offs in all of these, aren't there? So just very quickly, we're pretty much out of time, but just very briefly, when the COVID risk has receded and that's a neutral thing, will you be shaking people's hands again?
I will be, yeah, I will be. I think, you know, the evidence is that will happen. There are so many wonderful stories of kind of epidemics kind of taking over places around the world historically, and kind of they're not wonderful stories, but they're very kind of interesting stories, and people shunning each other and stopping the handshake, sometimes even banning the handshake, forming anti-handshake societies and wearing pins to symbolize that they're members of these anti-handshake societies. And in all of those cases, once those epidemics or pandemics ended, people started shaking hands again. So I think it's inbuilt. It's probably not going anywhere. If uncontacted tribes are shaking hands, I think we can probably assume that it's going to be here for a while.
Brilliant. Everyone can enjoy their inner bonobo when next they get an opportunity to shake hands. Thank you very much, Ella. It's been a brilliant discussion. There's so much to talk about. Ella's book is The Handshake, A Gripping History, and I highly recommend you read it. I'm Helen Charsky, and you've been listening to Intelligence Squared.
Thanks for listening to Intelligence Squared. This episode was produced by Connor Boyle with editing from Tom Hall. We'd love to hear your feedback and what you think we should be talking about next. Send us an email or a voice note with your thoughts to podcasts@intelligencesquared.com. And if you'd like to hear more, attend some of our live events, or peruse over 20 years of the back catalogue featuring some of the world's great minds, then head over to intelligencesquared.com.